And anyway, that's how I found out that my sister was allergic to peanuts and shellfish. Go figure. Anyway, no, I'm joking. Sorry, that was maybe that was a triggering joke for some people. Damn it, Jim, we're going to keep that in. Hi, you probably know that this is Andy and Otko and Flo. This is also Flo. Hello, Flo.
Hi, hello. It's me. I'm Flo.
Yes.
I hope you can't hear my kid in the background. For some reason, she's still awake while we're doing this podcast, but it's a bonus episode. She's the bonus.
I think she's anticipating, like, when we expand this podcast into live streaming, so that she says, you know, I know that I could just get it, like, on my podcatcher tomorrow, but damn it, I want to watch the live. I want to comment. I want a live comment. Like, as
can
we go.
I bring up something real quick before we get into the actual content of Please. Our bonus episode? Which is that I am, the last time that I was in in-person event was when we did the Pixel 4 event together in New York City. And so I have been manifesting what it would be like to be in your presence again. Even though we are on opposite side of the coast, we have two very, you know, disparate lives, like just manifesting the probability of this. And I know live streaming doesn't necessarily, you know, doesn't mean that we have to be with each other in person, but it just made me think, I think also because I've been in the house for a long time.
Yeah. There's definitely a lot of that going around. I mean, there's still some things that I haven't done quite yet. And like since the start of the pandemic, like
the pandy.
Yeah, I know that a couple of weeks ago on the podcast, I talked about, oh, I've got great plans. I want to see the Bob's Burgers movie on the day it's released.
Yeah.
And they're going to go out and get burgers afterward. And it's not as though, like, I don't want you to picture me fully dressed up, fully in my, like, Linda Belcher cosplay with my hand on the doorknob about to leave. And I decided to suddenly, like, think better of it. It's like, I don't know if I want to go to a movie theater right now. And so I'm hoping to. I'm right there at the precipice. Like, whereas like a year ago, there's no way I was going to go into a movie theater. Now it's like I will. Now it's more like I will, and it could happen at any moment. But if, like, if I'm a little bit tired from, like, lack of sleep last night, I'm going to duck. I'm going to use that as an excuse to duck out of it. So we're still doing.
See, but if we could only just see each other safely, I feel. We should manifest it. Anyway, we should probably manifest this bonus episode.
Absolutely. I'm very happy with this, and this was a selfish suggestion for a bonus episode, because we, as particularly as, like, people who are, like, self-employed, or I'm sorry, work completely, like, work from home with a lot of,
for 5 years.
Exactly.
Yes.
We're all familiar with the concept of going down, like, Google search rat holes, where for some. Oh. Yeah,
honey, I'm still doing this now as an employee.
Exactly. I don't know whether is it worse when you are, like, you're actually on the clock with a job. So,
it's,
you know,
so much worse.
The first 90 minutes of after 9 o'clock belong to me.
I mean, it depends on the day, right? Because sometimes, you know, I just really need to look into the episode summary of that season of Full House, because I really want to understand the trajectory of the narrative of Uncle Joey's rise into puppetry. That was an important storyline for Full House.
Oh, God. That was... See?
I'm rewatching it right now, folks. I'm watching it with my kiddo. It's a friendly thing to put on around the kid. It's got, you know, the same three shots of San Francisco. And, you know, it's something that I've Googled immensely.
No, that's fine. I winced a little bit because, like, this is probably, like, one of the more precise markers of like my age, that there are certain TV shows that came about right about, like, when I had absolutely lost my childlike joy for, like, even, like, stupid, silly entertainment, and had gotten past the cynical age where it's like, God, like, I'm not going to watch that. It's stupid. I'm not going to do crap. And the area of, I'm trying to figure out when it happened, but I would probably been in, like, mid 20s, maybe something like that. But the age in which, like, again, now I have like a real job and it's like, you know, I'm going to watch this show even though it's stupid because I think it'll be stupid and I don't want to do something else for 30 minutes. And so I remember Dave Coulier. I'm nothing against Dave Coulier. I'm sure he's a wonderful person, but it's like he's like Howie Mandel, where he has that like one like character Mandel voice that it's just that this is what hit me as I was watching it like at the time. Yeah, it's like hi, I've got when you're trying to make like a regular actor. So, oh, by the way, your character, we decided in season two to give him like something to do. He's like a voice actor. And so that's fine, because I have this one squeaky high voice that like I sometimes did in my comedy act. And now you know that it's like when there's an actor who like his hobby is magic. And like the first couple of times, like he introduces the fact that, oh, my character is also like an amateur magician. Like the first time it's like, oh, I had no idea that this real actor actually like did card tricks. And then like, and yes, I'm thinking about Neil Patrick Harris. And then like the 19th time, he'll show up on anything.
I didn't know that.
And it's as much as I genuinely like Neil Patrick Harris, it's like, oh, he's been cast in a production of Sweeney Todd at Carnegie Hall. Like, he's gonna figure out a way to make the character do a magic trick, isn't he? I'm tense all the way through the show, thinking that he's got his hand on his left arm. Is he about to like pull out a? Oh God! Don't.
God.
So that's what that's about.
It's like Justin Timberlake's beatboxing days. It was very embarrassing. I hated it. Yeah. Even as a NSYNC teeny bopper, okay, fully ensconced. I had a t-shirt for every day of the week. I cried every time I thought about them. Oh, teenage dumb. Could not stand his stupid, appropriate-y beatboxing. It was just like, why? 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 Yeah.
Well, see, that's what a lot of this is about, too, because but we'll get to the topic again. Talk about rat holes. Our theme is rat holes. But see, I this is why like I try not when I have a hobby, I try not to necessarily share it with like the world, because there's a difference between like Justin Timberlake probably either understands or doesn't understand that the fact that he can beatbox like somebody who. That's not really what they do, but they kind of like it and they've heard enough of it to for fun. Mm-hmm. They kind of do that. He probably understands that the reason why like he gets to beatbox for like 80 minutes during every show is not because he's one of the best, greatest, innovative beatboxers out there. It's because he's Justin Timberlake and someone paid $380 for really bad seats and they love anything he does. And then like if you think that
so
he's
much money.
Yeah. then if you think that he's I've now seen some really great beatboxing, but then like you see someone who is really a beatboxer and you're like, oh, I had no idea. It's almost disgraceful that he's representing the art of beatboxing. The personal example is I will not say this singer's name because I'm already being too negative, but it's like but this is my favorite example of like a pop singer who like puts an opera song into her act, and it's not like Aretha Franklin singing Nessun Dorma, where it's like she put her own spin on it and it's beautiful, and she sang it for the first time because she was subbing for Luciano Pavarotti, who like actually had canceled out in a gig. And so that's wonderful, and she was also treating like any other song and treating it with respect. Whereas this other singer also sang Nessun Dorma, but it was part of "And I Know That the Lord Jesus Has Given Me This Blessed Gift of Music that's so powerful that this God given gift that I can not only sing the songs that you know, but I can also sing opera," and. And it's like, okay, this is going to be interesting. And you know that, okay, she sang the melody, but no, if you're saying that this is a sign of how much God loves you, that she gave you, that he or she or it or whatever gave you this blessing of a voice that could even sing opera, it's like, no, you're not. You're really not. You're not doing it the way that Aretha sang it, which is that I'm going to put my own spin on it, and I'm going to turn this into something new and beautiful and magical that no one's ever seen before. Her, this other singer's idea was that you're going to like cry and say, yes, praise Jesus. And oh my God, I never know that this singer was so immensely talented. Like, no, you're not. You're just using this. Again, people have never heard opera before, are probably not going to like that song anyway, not like they would like the Aretha Franklin version. They're just kind of like that, oh my God, I love the singer and she's singing opera. Anyway.
See, this is great. Anybody who's listening to material for the first time already knows now that these are things we talk about. You talk about opera. I'm actually learning a lot more about it through you. I go on pop culture tangents. It's perfect.
Yes.
What other rabbit holes have you found yourself down lately?
Okay. So the premise of this bonus episode is that to share again those moments where I don't know why I got so trapped up in this. I'm not that I regret it. Okay, but this, so my first pick is cave diving accidents.
Whoa, Andy,
yeah.
What?
Okay.
Why? What if this is something I want to do someday? This is because cave diving is within the realm of adventure that I would do.
I'm the absolute opposite of wanting to do this someday. As a matter of fact,
okay,
I think we will never record like what led down this rat hole. But but for a long time, I've had this sort of like realization that sometimes you do this thinking experiment with yourself that what is something that let's say there's a game show. Actually, there was a game show like this called Who Dares Wins, I think, on Australian television, where it was like, we will, in a very good natured way, like if you apply for the show as a contestant and you're accepted, in a very good natured way, we are going to like interview like all your friends and families and find out what it is that absolutely terrifies you. And we are, in a very positive and like positive way, going to give you a challenge that involves doing that thing that scares you. And if you complete this task, you'll get like $100,000 or something.
Fear Factor?
No, Fear Factor was horrible because it's just like, hey, we're going to see how stupid you are, like how desperate you are to like be on television. This was more like I'm like, this person is absolutely immensely fear of heights, and I think the challenge they gave her was something that is actually sort of like a thrill seeking sort of thing, where two hot air balloons with like a platform connecting the two baskets.
Oh my God, even I wouldn't do that.
Right.
Like, I don't and normally have an issue.
It's not like a Joe Rogan type with like muscle suit and like tattoos saying, oh, what are you going to do? You're going to wimp out. It's like, no, we're.
For those who don't remember, he was the original host of Fear Factor. That's how he started this whole thing.
But it was a very positive thing where it's like, okay, we're going to work you through this. And we wouldn't even be filming this if you hadn't agreed that this is something that you would like to try to do. And again, they got psychologists, they've got people who are just, let's walk you up to this. And at the end, we're not going to be like, again, goading you to do this. If you can basically say no at any time. And if you say no, we're not going to make fun of you for it. So it was a very, so I was thinking like, what challenge would that be for me? Like, would there be a challenge that seems so beyond the pale for me that even if it was, here's $1 million, if you can do this, it would probably be cave diving. I've gone scuba diving once. Under these very, very, very controlled conditions that, like, the regulatory Same. Agency allowed. I don't know if they still do it, but for 1 to 5 instruction, like, for every master diver, there's only, like, 5 students take you to an area that's only 20 feet deep, which is, again, like, a deep, like, swimming pool depth, where the worst that can happen.
Still gives me the heebie-jeebies. Okay. Just, like, being
so
deep.
But again, that's really quite safe. Like, the worst that could possibly happen is that, I don't know, you would have to, if you got into an accident, like at that sort of stage, like God clearly intended for you not to survive past this day. So the number of things that would have to gone wrong for anything bad to have happened.
I have done scuba diving, by the way, when I was 12, but it was through like a Hawaii vacation. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mine was also like in Hawaii. Where they'll figure out a way if there's any tourist that wants to do something that has money, not in the Las Vegas way where I don't care how dangerous it is, like we'll figure out a way to make this part of a recognized industry.
But the
idea of a cave diving, which is exactly as it sounds, it's like you are entering a cave system that is completely underwater, and it's like. And I've seen a couple of like one or two videos. There was also a National Geographic like special about underwater archaeology. where it's all about, and of course, the first 10 minutes is all about, like, and of course, you know, you're cut off from the, you have to remember, like, how to get, work your way back out of the cave system, and you, people get lost, and as they're swimming in there, they kick up silt that's been, like, collecting on the cave walls, and so now suddenly you're completely blacked out on all sides, even your cave light doesn't work anymore, and maybe you lost the rope that you have that to guide you in and out, and there are parts that are so, for the extreme people, like, there are parts that are so narrow that they actually have to take their tanks off and push them in front of there.
And then,
yes, exactly, because it's a very anxiety-inducing thing. I mean, the fact that I think the fact this National Geographic special started with, like, on the first dive, as they're laying out, it was actually a fascinating special because it was about archaeology, where the idea was that here is this cave, right. This cave used to be, like, in a million years ago, like, open to the air. So there are critters that, like, crawled in there and, like, lived and died. But now it's filled with water. So now it's cold. So it's been no light. So it's been perfectly preserved. So it's a wonderful place to do, like, research into what animals
nature's
were like.
Nature's refrigerator.
Then. Right.
Freezer, I should say.
But of course, like, to make sure that people understand, like, how dangerous it is, like, you know, the first, like, as they're preparing, like, the dive area so that it's, so that all the resources, like, and all the lights, all the lines, everything, like, and of course they find, you know, this, I think they filmed this in, like, 2000, 2001, like, just past the entrance, they find, like, a body in, like, a 1978 era, like, wetsuit. It was somebody who went in without training and again succumbed to all that stuff. So I started, like,
I'm so astonished.
I know. See, this is why this is, like, total nightmare fuel. This is why,
like, I'm proud of you, actually, for going like this. This, you're going hard. I really like that.
Well, again, well, that was incidental. So I basically, but it was, like, a moment where I was thinking, like, I wonder, it's like, how dangerous is it? Like, there's, the scuba, as it happens, like, has a yin yang sort of relationship in terms of, like, sports that are dangerous. It has a yin yang relationship for me with skydiving. Another thing that I've, which is a thing that I have no desire to do. It's like, because I've always felt that scuba is, like, these are both dangerous activities or activities that come with a certain element of danger. However, scuba is such that you will survive unless things go very, very wrong. Whereas skydiving is, no, you will absolutely die unless things go very, very right. Like, it's, as soon as you jump out of that airplane, you're dead. And you're counting on this parachute to save you. And if that parachute does not work, there's nothing else to do. Whereas scuba is like, I can dive and go, like, 18 feet below the water. And again, there's almost nothing that can happen that would be that'd be in danger. And so I was kind of curious to see, it was like an idle link and an idle sort of thing. Like, I wonder if, like, I should read about this. If it scares me so much, like, if I would not even for $1 million and 5 years of preparation, like, be interested in doing this, where I thought that even in a who dares win situation where they're going to create a situation for me, they're going to be giving me training, they're going to be fine. Like, no, I feel as though I would be putting other divers in danger with me just because I would freak out. So I did start like looking at this, and that led to a deep, 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 no pun intended, rat hole where, and of course, all of the stories are, like, super, super sad because I did learn, it was a positive experience because I did learn that most of the really, really sad stories come about from either A, like the 1970s or 1980s before there was, like, a cave diving certification and, like, there's like a multi-generational culture of rules. Like, here are five rules that you absolutely are not going to violate under any circumstances. I don't care if you spent $8,000 and been planning this trip for 2 years. Like, if this thing is not, if this thing doesn't happen, you're not diving, or we're not diving, and no one else will dive with you because that's how stupid it is, and that's how bad this thing is. And but so all these sad stories do come from either A, this happened in, like, 1983, or this is somebody who, like, just did thought that, hey, look, I went to Hawaii once and I dove to like 18 feet once.
Right.
Hey, it's Christmas and I got my Christmas bonus and I bought myself scuba diving gear and I'm going to go to this. I think I want to check out that cave, even though there is literally, and I'm using the word literally correctly here, like the standard warning sign underwater to indicate that, you know, stop. If you can't, you cannot go past this point unless you have cave diving certification. It's not a sort of like, here's a purple, like orange, here's like a purple circle with a symbol, with a hand sign or whatever, with a cross through it or whatever. It is, no, it is a picture. It is a line drawing of the Grim Reaper beckoning you forward with a bony skeletal hand that says, stop, do not pass this place. You know, this is a, you will die without information. Your life is not worth going past this place. And so people who were saying, gee, I was able to like buy $1,400 for the diving equipment. I certainly know what I'm doing, or knowing that, or thinking that I'm just going to go in a little bit and then turn around and come back. It's good to think that, like, there's a safe-ish way to do it. Now I do think that, again, with one hell of an incentive, like, again, $1 million tax-free, and you have 5 years to, like, spend, like, a lot of time training to get certified and to be with a team of people. I would never do it recreationally or voluntarily, but now I do think I would do that. But getting back to, like, the rat hole sort of stuff, it gets interesting because, like, it also introduced me to, I don't know how to call this. There's a the part of YouTube that is all about, like, telling horrible stories about, really terrifying stories about how people died or got killed. And not like as, hey, I'm a news reporter and here's something I researched. It's like, hi, I'm a YouTuber. I've got my hair and makeup all done. I practiced my pouty and scared face for the thumbnail. And now I'm going to, using clips I got from YouTube,
porn.
Thank you very much. Do this really tacky thing where I'm going to like I'm telling a ghost story, only this is someone who actually died, you know?
This is like the housewives who listen to true crime.
Yeah, see, that's
how I feel.
That's another. I don't like true crime podcasts because
need to hear about how people are hunting people.
Yeah, I mean, I won't, and I don't want to bring this totally down, but, you know, I do have like a family member who died through a violent crime, and it's like, well, great. So what? There's going to be someone who's looking. Gee, I got a sponsorship from this new high tech wallet, but I have nothing to talk about 3 weeks from Tuesday. Ooh, let's find something. Ooh, heads are great. I'll get the really scared. Ooh, you won't believe what happened to this, and that kind of puts you like in the right place. So I will close.
Or a MailChimp advertisement. That also.
Yeah. We said hoping that MailChimp is not going to be an upcoming advertiser. I will end with one example story because it's super, super interesting. That's the one thing that is left me with. Oh, by the way, one of these, I will say that there's a channel called Dive Talk that was very, very helpful because these are like two like really, really well-certified, well-trained divers that occasionally like will do reaction videos, but the good kind, not like, oh my God, I can't believe he just did that. Stop. Oh my God, I can't believe they just did that. Okay, now our next sponsor is they will actually sort of tear down some of these trauma videos and say, okay, first of all, it's not that dangerous. Second of all, that diver was going in it shows you that he was filling his tanks with this normal air for scuba diving. You would absolutely need the special mix, so it's been very, very, you know, very educational. And
you need special air. That makes sense, right? That makes sense because you're going.
Because one of the problems is that, like, below a certain depth, you get what they call narked, which means that they actually call it the martini rule, where below, at certain levels of depth, it's like drinking a martini, and that's the, like, almost like an alcoholic effect, where you're kind of drunk off of like what is happening with the how your brain is processing this normal type of oxygen. That means that this will cause you to, oh, I'm 200 feet deep. Hey, look, here's a sign with a picture of the Grim Reaper saying, for God's sake, save your life. Don't go further than this. But I bet that does. I bet that's just for show. That's just for Instagram. So this story is this is something that gets quoted a lot. The story of Ben McDaniel, because it's a missing persons story. See,
oh no, an unsolved mystery.
Yes, but and I'm not going to try to hype it up because again, that's tacky, and this is a real person. So it really is a mystery because again, there is this place called Vortex Spring in Florida, has a very, very famous, but not thought of as a kind of an.
I'm going to Google while you explain it to me because now I want visuals. Go ahead.
So on the surface, it feels like this is not a terribly complicated story of what happened to him. Like he went on this, he was not certified. He was like reading up on his own. He fancied himself, you know, that he knew what he's doing. So he got in like over his head. Again, no pun intended. He forced his way through a gate where you're supposed to like have a key to prove, they won't give you the key to this gate unless you prove you're certified. And then he was just after 2 days where, people realize that, hey, his car is still parked there and nobody's seen him. Oh my God. I bet he like got lost in the cave and like drowned. So, okay, well, that's obviously what happened, but they couldn't find the body, which is also, okay, well, it's a cave system. Maybe it's just like hard to find. And also that's a dangerous place for you to be diving anyway. Like, for 30 days, like seasoned divers like went to look for him and couldn't find him. And as a matter of fact, there is this one guy that is really the guy that he's the person who's the most expert, skilled cave diver by reputation everywhere. He like cut short his vacation to fly down and look for him. He went into places that nobody can get into, didn't find him. They also, but now here's the twist. If he drowned in that cave system, you know, there are going to be microorganisms that are going to be using the remains as a source of food. And so there are water tests you can do to see, oh, what, there would be presence of these microorganisms. They didn't find anything. Like all the, there were a bunch of different other signs there would be to say, look, at least let's do some water tests to see if there is a body in here anywhere. They didn't find it anywhere. And so they also checked out, again, he read up on all this stuff. So he fancied himself like knowledgeable. So he put like other bottles of air, like for when he got out of the, you know, when he planned to get out of the cave to like decompress so he doesn't go all the way to the top. None of these bottles were suitable for like what he was going to do. Like they were broken, so they wouldn't have worked anyway. But he was supposedly knowledgeable enough that he wouldn't have said it that way. So there's a whole bunch of theories about like, how is it that someone died in this cave without any signs of a body having died in this cave? No signs of like a body that maybe washed out of a washed out to the topside elsewhere. Wasn't set properly, wasn't set the way that someone would have done it. So there's a, maybe he basically staged this accident so he could like disappear, or maybe he was murdered either for real or accidentally and someone like hid the body and like staged the scene so that it wouldn't look like a murder. So these are the things that come up. These are a lot of these reaction videos of like, again, these trauma porn videos, like, and then, but nobody knew what had happened to his parents insist that he would never have left his dog alone. Like things I got sick of on like Dateline NBC, like after the first season, they decided to turn themselves into, you know, here is an innocent person who was killed horribly. And now we're going to, rather than pay a writer to come up with something sickening that you can tell yourself didn't really happen, we're going to go real cheap and just like license a bunch of news footage. Anyway, so I'm pretty much free. I haven't done much of this. Like this was like about a month ago, but this is like one of the biggest rat holes I ever dropped down. The great thing about rat holes is that occasionally you get out of it, not much unlike a cave that you're diving through, but
occasionally.
So what's your first pick? Well, by the way, we did discuss beforehand, like, how long should this bonus episode be? We're already at the end of, we thought, oh, let's go for a half hour, but I think we're just going to talk until we're done.
And the thing is I'm not going to really go long because as you were telling your story, first of all, thank you for regaling us with that. That was incredible. I had visuals the whole time. And I also realized that maybe I don't ever want to go cave diving.
Yes.
I thought maybe it was something I could do because I have done the scuba diving, you know, in Hawaii as we talked, and it seemed so approachable, you know, and then Yasmin, our former host here at Material, goes diving over in Monterey Bay. And I'm just like, wow, that seems really fun. I would love to do that, but I'm never going cave diving.
Right. Me too.
The thing is, Andy, my rabbit holes are dark, very dark. And so it's difficult for me to share it publicly, not because of a shame factor, because it's clear I have no shame for the things that I do that I've brought up on this podcast, but it's because I really don't want to upset anybody. Because, you know, last summer, I really got into researching cults. And I've been, you know, I read like a great graphic novel about American cults. It's published by Silver Sprocket. Definitely check that out if you get a chance. It'll give you like an introduction to all the major American cults. That's how I found out, for instance, that the Cheesecake Factory is actually a funnel for a cult. I've never eaten at the Cheesecake Factory, but yes, it is.
I was not expecting that.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, the Cheesecake Factory. I love. It's my favorite thing now to tell people. It's my favorite little like factoid, because everybody loves to indulge at the Cheesecake Factory, and your money is going directly to a cult. The good news is, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the cult isn't like super abusive, violent the way some of the other cults are that I've looked into. Obviously, California is known, especially Southern California and the middle of nowhere, Northern California, known for harboring just some of the scariest, most awful cults, including Charles Manson's cult, which is all bad news bears. I'm like trying to think about the other one. What was the other? Oneida. Oneida is also cult money, which is they make silverware.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Silverware. Oh, flatware, I should say. Mm-hmm. Also a cult. That cult, by the way, is bad. That comes from a bad cult. Everybody, go read this graphic novel. It's a great introduction into it. And because of it, that's, you know, I started like going down Google rabbit holes. And like, I always start with Wikipedia. And I know my journalism professor was like, don't use Wikipedia for your research, but I figured out how to get around this. I always start there because they're very blessed to the people we've donated money to at Wikipedia for just basically bullet pointing every major point and just giving you sources where to start. You can start your research with Wikipedia. You never end there, all right? Unless it's like a fan-made wiki, in which case sometimes they get very, very intense. I really have been deep into polygamy. Just.
Show title.
I mean, really deep into researching. Because the thing is, but this is where it gets controversial, because I recognize that we may have Mormons who are listening to our podcast, Latter-day Saints, which are divorced from the fundamental Latter-day Saints, the FLDS, which is the Church of Warren Jeffs or whatever the hell his name is, who's just an absolute, like, bleh, bleh. I'm not going to even say the words into our podcast. I don't want to do that. But you know, I couldn't help but go down the rabbit holes of that. And especially, there's so much reality TV content around this about like people escaping polygamy. This is really.
Oh, dear.
I don't know why I do this. I think it's because it's exactly why I'm just into. I mean, everybody, you all know, listening to me after how many episodes I've been here, 250 episodes, just talking about like Hollywood. And, you know, I'm really into old Hollywood. And of course, I love all the drama that comes with old Hollywood and the mysteries. And for some reason, like cults really play into that. But in particular, the polygamy thing, I really have to blame it on the sister wives. Just after getting through that show and just seeing how they're trying to like normalize
a jaunty this reality show. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. And just like it, but also seeing the breakdown of this family that has been trying to modernize this very antiquated religious fundamentalism.
Yeah.
It's incredibly fascinating. So I love to look up just the most deranged things. And I had to stop recently, because Under the Banner of Heaven came out on Hulu, and I have a lot of I have a little group of friends and we really love to watch TV. So, you know, we love to watch prestige TV and we love to talk about it in our, little Discord group because, you know, it's how you pass the time. And I really wanted to like talk about this as, you know, Andrew Garfield acts in it and I really love to watch him act and I just think he's great, but it's dark. It's sad. It's dark and sad. Yeah. It's not polygamy, actually. It's actually just, I think it was a fundamentalist part of Mormonism, but because of how difficult it was to watch that, I'm not going to tell you why, but I'm just telling you, yeah. Massive trigger warning. I decided to put this on hold for a while.
Yeah.
So we're on hold right now. We're on hold of this rabbit hole.
That sounds like a positive
for self-preservation.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I know. But this is the problem, is that this is what I love to do. Can I counteract this very quickly with something just positive?
Absolutely.
Okay, great. I want to add some positivity to this. So I gave you my confession. This is my true confession. This is actually what I do late at night on the internet, which is true. You can look at my Google search results. The other thing that I've been doing, though, is I've been desperately, and I've talked about this before on the main podcast, which is that I'm desperately trying to remember my trail on the internet over 20 years ago.
Oh, I think you mentioned this before. Yeah.
Yes. It came back up again recently because The Real World New Orleans, which came out in 2000, it was a very formidable season for me. Mm. That was the year I started high school. Okay. So now everybody knows how old I am, but very formidable Real World for me. It was like a couple seasons before Real World, just completely tanked because what happened was Mary Bunham had passed from breast cancer.
Can I interject? I actually met her. Yes. And hung out with her for about a week. I actually sat in on I don't really call it interview process, but the audition process, because she and I were both like speaking like at the same conference. And it was like one of those conferences where it's not in New York City.
I'm glad I brought this up.
Yeah, it was at the University of Colorado Boulder. So like you're sort of in Boulder, which is a great place, but it doesn't mean that hey, I'm not speaking at the conference. I'm going to be going to the casinos. And I'm going to be going to the we wound up hanging out quite a bit. Really, really respected her. She's smart as a whip. Very, very kind. Not the sort of person you certainly today would think of as someone who's associated with like reality television. She really was a documentarian. So here's an opportunity. You see the mind that created this series, the idea of people who are just out of college where they don't know what the world is mm-hmm. like yet, but they have ambitions and they're very, very explorative and they're very, very, they're very interested in seeing what's out there. This is a wonderful subject for a documentary. And of course, then people forget that the first few seasons really were like more like a documentary than anything else. It's not like, hey, okay, why is there yes. like a fully why are there like cases and cases of beer and scotch in every single room? Like, okay, the producers put that in there because they're trying to encourage people to drink because that will make them rowdy.
I apologize for what the early aughts did to the Real World. Yes. It truly did. Kill it.
So she was really nice. And then while she was in Boulder, she said, I guess she thought this would be a good opportunity to do like, you know, not so much they're casting for an upcoming, I don't know if they were specifically casting for a specific season or just simply saying, let's do an open call and, you know, see who we turn up because that's part of the job. And so she invited me along. And so I was there like at her end of the table at, like, I guess they rented out a bar. That of course that was just for the space, just for like a big open space with lots of chairs,
right?
No alcohol in there at all. And so for an hour and a half, I saw like, you know, as people's names got called, and she'd have a very nice like 5 or 10 minute conversation with each one of these people. And it was her kindness really showed through. That this would be a positive. She wasn't like, okay, first of all, have you ever been arrested for a felony that would be really cool to take video of? And you know, it was really, well, who are you? Like, what drives you? What's this? And it's having a real conversation with people. And I came away from the experience thinking that, boy, that was a time really well spent, because I thought I had a very, very positive not life changing, but it was interesting to observe both A, the kindness that she showed to total strangers who are obviously in a very, very nervous situation, but also seeing at this point, I was only like maybe 5 years older than the people who are auditioning, because I was not mm-hmm. I was not that far out of college myself. And I guess some of the people who are maybe on the older edge of this, of the audition, like bandwidth, I was probably as old. It was interesting to see like how quickly you could sort of peg certain people, like not who I know exactly who you are, but just say, okay, this is not who this person really is. They are trying to, as any of us, as a lot of us would do, say, I've got 5 minutes to make this person think that it's impossible to, for this person to know who I am in 5 minutes. So I've got to like overact, and I've got to like, you know, I'm going to lean right. back in the chair. I'm not going to take off my sunglasses. I'm not going to make direct eye contact because I have an ethereal otherness that kind of draws people in. I don't know. Oh, I shouldn't have said that out loud, because now I'm going to be pegged as the mysterious otherness who's really, really cool. But, and the other thing, which is this is the thing that really stuck with me, is the idea of people who are in lost lamb phases of their lives, and not just kids, but oftentimes kids, but where they don't know what moves them. They haven't found that thing that moves them yet. And they're sort of wandering at this point. And this is not neither a good thing or a bad thing, but you right. can tell when someone is getting into acting because this is what's driving me. This is what the first time I did it, I knew that I'd found something that would complete who I am. And this is my passion. I don't care if I make a living at it, because I'm always going to be doing this. And the people where I don't know. I know that office work doesn't suit me. I know that I kind of like it when like I get to talk to other people. Maybe acting is the thing. And so there were a lot of people that, again, no pity involved whatsoever, but you could tell that at some point the thought process went, maybe I can do this, or maybe this, I don't know what to do next, I'll do this. And this won't be my, obviously not that this is going to be my career, but maybe that will be the next adventure that lets me find the next thing. And so it's stuck with me, because it made me think a lot of, helped me understand a lot and recognize a lot of behavior that I wasn't able to recognize before, that thinking that, okay, this person is just in lost lamb mode right now, where they'll probably find it, but they haven't found it yet. And they're going to be going off in a lot of seemingly random tangents, not because they can't commit, not because they refuse to focus, not because they refuse to grow up, but because, you know, they're still cranking that starter engine, and the tangent is just not turning over, and they just got to keep cranking it until finally that engine of that'll take you through the rest of your life engages and hits. But yeah, what wonderful person.
And you can see why that show resonated with little me, yeah. And why I would like sneak watch it. But the thing about the real world, so rural New Orleans, just to sort of like bookend this. So rural New Orleans, they had the homecoming. So they decided they did New York and LA, which are seasons 1 and 2, the very first. And then they jumped straight to 8. And I think they're doing it based on who they can get together. And there's some very controversial casts that yeah. they're going to keep from getting together. Like, you can never get together San Francisco, not just because Pedro, rest in peace, but like Rachel's gone off the deep end with Sean from rural Boston. Oh. But see, this is what I've been Googling. I've been Googling all these people and like what they've been into and stuff. So the thing that I did back in the early 2000s is I would stalk the rural New Orleans people on their websites, because this was the era where we were all doing personal websites. Like, you had to have a presence on the web, and they were of the age, right? Like, all of us kids, we were getting on the internet and finding our voices on the internet. And so this was the beginning of that for me, of seeing other people like taking it there. And so I am back now to walking myself back through this life, this timeline of life, I should say. And I've started by looking up the archives of their websites that I used to go to. So like Melissa had princessmelissa.com, where she would, you know, like blog. And it's just, it's fun. It is fun.
I'm with you, because I enjoyed Bands on the Run was a competition music reality show on VH1 that at the end was clearly very, very fake as hell, but early days. So it was more like a documentary on, here are four bands that are just like local bands, and we'll send them on tour together. and we'll give them competition. We'll give them challenges, and the whoever wins at the very, very end of the season will get like a contract with Epic Records and $100,000 and $100,000 equipment, blah, blah, blah. And so it was fun.
Nice.
It was fun slash interesting afterwards to be just I did exactly the same thing that you were doing, like checking out like the MySpace pages of these bands and the yes. personal pages of some of these musicians, and you know, and having an idea of who they are from the show. That, of course, very, very selectively edited, very, very artificial situation. And then just know here is like the place where very non-promotional, just a musician who's blogging, right. and finding out here's what drives me. Here is like how hard it is for me to, you know, visit my dad, and not like oversharing, but just this one line, like, well, I haven't seen my dad in like a couple months. I really got to go see him. And it's always awkward, but okay. Well, it's like, oh, okay. These are the layers that I would have been missing from a regular documentary. But yes, San Francisco is great because that was, of course, the love affair between Pam Ling and Judd Weinick. That they
who ended up together.
They
have children together,
and they're so awesome. They're like both like nerds, yeah. and like they mm-hmm. their Instagrams are wonderful. And again, they both have really, really hugely like Pam Ling is now a professor at San Francisco.
I think she's at UCSF. Yes, I just need to interject quickly and remind you of the episode when Judd surprises her for her birthday by flying her boyfriend in for her birthday. Yep. I watched that episode last night, so it was very fresh.
Yes. In my mind. I guess I still see this is probably the one where has the most synchronicity with my life, because I think I'm about the same age as almost everybody like in that show. And so I still remember like this shot of Judd, like, such a lovable, like, sad sack in terms of romance, you know, like making himself like a dinner of like just random pasta, like random shapes of pasta, yeah. like in a mixing bowl, and musing on like, and doing a funny voice like, oh, well, the luck of love. I was not determined to be lucky that way. And he's getting a little bit sad. But he's catching himself, right? And of course, the brilliant thing is like they knew that there was a spark between the two of them, like Pam and Judd.
And we knew the audience.
Yeah, but they're like okay, but they're so sensible and saying like, whereas a modern one would say like the first time the group gets together and saying okay, what if like you and I like fall in love and that'll be a storyline, and like 2 weeks in we start fighting, get jealous because we want to get as much camera time as possible. It was they were so sensible saying okay, number one, if this is a real thing, we can't really pursue this while the show is recording, because A, we would want our privacy, and B, that will sort of risk the future that we could have together. So we're going to keep this super, super secret. And they really started seeing each other after the show. And they are some couples, they're like a salt and pepper shaker, or like one, mm-hmm. you know, where you might see like a salt and pepper shaker of just like a baseball player in a very odd position and at a yard sale. And it's like, God, it's cute, but what is that? And then you see like, what you don't know is that there's like a baseball that's supposed to be the pepper mm-hmm. that they fit together. Now it mm-hmm. makes complete sense why the batter is like posed that way. There are a lot of people that are absolutely like that, where I see these two together, it's like, oh, you are the baseball player and baseball salt and pepper shaker. Like you make so much sense together again. So and the fact that they both had such great careers.
That was a good rabbit hole. But, oh.
And Judd is an amazing writer. He has a line of kids books that, my God, after writing for DC Comics, after self-publishing his own stuff, and now
like, I know
he will fill up, like he is loved by children, not only for the children's books that he writes, but also by the fact that there will be when he has a new book, there'll be an assembly and you'll get out of class and the entire like cafe gymatorium will be packed with like adoring like 6, 7, 8, 9-year-old kids. Anyway, Hilo, really, really great stuff. Okay, well, I will end with a fun one, an uplifting one. I'm glad that we pulled the plane up into love stories. So there's an auction. I love, this is not a rat hole so much as this did not start off with a rat hole, because I love going to when there's a company called The Prop Store that auctions off, like specializes in Hollywood movie props and costumes and ephemera and right. that sort of stuff. And I love when when auctions of these kinds come up, because they'll publish an auction catalog in which they will photograph in great detail a lot of these props and costumes. And for the website, of course, there's this huge, huge, super high resolution pictures. And this costume that you just got a glance of, now you can actually really, really scrutinize to the last detail. And or a prop where you realize that, oh, wow, I didn't realize that was actually what I thought was this really complicated thing was actually a hairdryer where they glued all these other things to it or whatever. So I'm looking through every single item in this prop store auction that's happening later this month. They have an original costume from Forrest Gump when Forrest was at the Lincoln Memorial. In his full like army dress uniform after having received the Congressional Medal of Honor. And so I'm like, oh, that's zooming in, trying to see, because I don't know about military decorations. I do know what like the Medal of Honor like ribbon looks like not the thing that you wear around the neck, but the thing that we have that little like salad bar of like little things on your upper chest for the mini version, the mini mate yes. version of the. I wonder if like they put that on the costume, and they didn't. And I thought that, gee, that seems, oh, well, no. According to, in that point in the story, he's just been awarded the medal he has. So he would not have like taken apart his, like, again, the salad bar mm-hmm. thing and put in like a little tiny version of it. He has the ribbon around his neck, and that's it. Because it's always fun. What's fun about these kind of investigations is thinking that how deep did they go into this? Like, costume designers are amazing because they get into so much detail. Like the costume designers on Tarantino movies, they're famous. This is something I just learned last week, where one of the actors from Inglourious Bastards or Bastards, mm-hmm, whatever, mm-hmm. However they chose to misspell it, said that no, it's like not only in my costume they give me a wallet that is like a wallet filled with money and filled with IDs and filled with other like pieces of paper, that there's no scene in which I take out a wallet. It's just there so that like I've got it in there, and if I look through it, I will learn things about the character. So that makes sense that I'm sure I didn't really investigate everything that was on Forrest Gump's costume uniform, but I assume it was all like correct for what was going on there. So then go forward, and they've got Steve Martin's costume from Sergeant Bilko, and here I'm this is again who is playing a real like one of those like comedies that got greenlit because of Blockbuster. You know, where it did have a theatrical release, but you can tell that mm-hmm. most of the calculus that the studio did was that, oh, if this has if we cast Dan Aykroyd and Steve Martin in the mid-90s, like this is going to rent like nobody's business. Absolute greenlit in the room. But it's not necessarily like, I feel as though my life has been building up, been preparation for essaying the role of Sergeant Bilko. I mean, it's fun stuff, but it's not necessarily
great like stuff. Some of the streaming stuff we get now.
Right. So not as bad as that. at least one kind of had a budget. So but
that's
here
true, because they had to press things.
Yeah, exactly. But here's one where, oh my god, he's got like all kinds of like, again, like maybe three or four lines of these like medals ribbons like on his dress uniform, and I'm thinking, oh, I wonder like if they just like got this box of stuff and put some stuff on there that kind of like looked good and made sense. So I wound up again on this rat hole like investigating everything on Sergeant Bilko's uniform, and I'm pausing here because I'm trying to figure out how whether this was serious or not. I found myself getting a little bit wrapped up in that. I don't know if they were telling the story of Sergeant Bilko's military career, but it added a layer of depth to the character that like I wasn't anticipating, that really kind of like knocked me back a step. Because again, this is a comedy. Sergeant Bilko is like running the motor pool at this army, whatever, like as a miniature fiefdom, trying to get gambling operations, getting as much scams as possible, always putting one over on the major or the colonel, like played by Dan Aykroyd. And so you're not expecting, well, what was his combat experience? And so by analyzing, and this is all consistent, so whoever they consulted to do this must have put together a story. Sergeant Bilko saw some stuff in Vietnam, man. Okay.
Yeah.
Because I think
especially if Apocalypse Now exists in the same,
Yeah, it was
metaverse, whatever it's called.
Absolutely. It's like, It's like, and again, I know that I'm reading into this, but it felt like he did three tours in Vietnam. So he wasn't just drafted and then just like did his 2 years and was lucky to get out alive. It was like, according to his service stripes, he's been in the Army for 27 years. He's there 7 years past like his 20 where he would be getting his pension. So that's significant. All of his early medals are Vietnam related. He won the Bronze Star with Valor device, which means that like bravery and gallantry and heroism under fire in combat. He won like two expeditionary medals, no Purple Hearts. So he wasn't injured, but like, so up until like, through Vietnam, he was, again, he clearly saw some stuff. And then
you got this from his jacket thing,
because like it is a story. There are medals that are just basic, like, oh, here's the it's Pride Month, so I think, oh, here's a rainbow medal, like that can't be like Pride Month because it was like, but that, mm-hmm. This is like, no, if you complete basic training you get this, so that's gonna be the first one that you get. And then there are good conduct medals where it's the medal is what is a ribbon, but then they put, I think they call them devices, meaning that rather than giving you like eight good, instead of having eight of these things on your shoulder there, whatever, you basically add like a little cluster or a little like rope that has.
Right.
So he was,
I've seen those, yeah.
So good conduct means that there's absolutely no incidents, nothing written up for a 3 year period. And he got that like four times. So basically he's managed to, so as even when he went into being a scammy master sergeant, he's a master sergeant, by the way, which is like the highest sergeant you can be without being like a super, super sergeant, whatever. So he's in a place of high responsibility, but he has managed to keep his nose clean, like over a long extended period. And so again, there's the medal that says that, yeah, this is the Silver Star, but also it has the V like on top of it, which means that no, not only did he get the bronze or silver star, I think it might have been the silver, but it means that no, this was especially harrowing, the reasons why he got this. It's like the fourth or the fifth highest combat medal you can possibly get, with the Medal of Honor being the very, very top. He has his combat infantry badge, which means that again, he was in a combat area where there was like on the ground with fire. On and on and on. His unit commendations from the presidential unit commendation, unit commendations from the government of Vietnam. And it's like, and I really am just like one by one, like going through each of these things on his uniform and doing Wikipedia searches and other things. And also discovering that you can buy one of these for like $3 or $4. And I think that they just sort of trust you that you have the right to actually put on your uniform. I can't think of much.
And back then it was cheaper.
Yeah. It's
right.
Like,
they probably just went to a surplus store maybe and just picked them out of a little basket. 10 cents each.
This is, it really did get me thinking, like, especially because, again, you are a costume designer. You're like a costumer, like on a movie. And it's like, stolen valor is a really, I really do regard that as a really, really terrible thing. People who like, mm-hmm. I want to sort of piggyback on like our respect for people who have been wounded in combat by just basically mail ordering a used set of combat medals and putting that like on my thing. As a matter of fact, not far away from where I live, the head of the VFW was discovered that, oh, well, you've never been to Afghanistan. You've been attending like all the veterans memorials, like in the county, in the state or whatever, dressed in your Marine dress blue with all this stuff on it. But, you know, and of course, a real Marine knows that, hey, you put this thing on backwards, or this thing was not supposed to be here. It's supposed to be on the other side. Mm-hmm. I feel as though if I have sympathy for these people, it's because I feel as though it's largely, part of it could be mental illness, where it's like, I need to create an identity where I feel respect that I don't actually feel or whatever. But I'm thinking about that as like, again, you're in the costume department, and to you, you've been asked to basically put together a dress uniform for Steve Martin, who's playing the role of a master sergeant. So, okay, here's the Army uniform of that period, again, modern period. A master sergeant would mean that he would have like this thing, you know, three stripes up, three stripes down. Like, okay, what, and of course he's going to have as a 20 year veteran, he's going to have some stuff of the medals on his uniform is going to tell his story. Am I entitled to give him the Silver Star with Valor? Am I entitled to give him, you know, gallantry in combat? And it's like, it must be kind of interesting going through. And for you, as the designer, you've got this box full of stuff and it's nicely organized to tell you what each one of these things is and where you'd use it and what time period it's for. And you're as you're fishing out this, it's easy for me to take this thing out of this little like organizer and pin this on this uniform. But in real life, this would have meant that this person's life was almost ended and certainly changed permanently by virtue of the fact that they're wearing this on the uniform. I kind of wonder what that is like or if I'm overthinking it.
No, I don't think you're overthinking it. I think it's just really interesting how we started this episode just trying to go down like Google search rabbit holes. And really, I think what we discovered is that this unregulated utility that we use, the search engine, is just it's a gateway to a lot of curiosity and a lot of uncovering things. And I'm really glad that you and I are the kind of people that can sort of make something of it, because I think that's really important. We just told each other stories about things that we did as individuals on our own, like by ourselves at night.
No, that really is one of the great things about the Google search engine, probably beyond most others, because it does get to know you and what you're kind of interested in. So it makes it very easy to very, very easy to take just this idle curiosity and turn it into a deep fascination. And again, I haven't become like a cave diving buff. I haven't become a fan of like learning stories about people, how people died horribly. I have a new respect for this fictional master sergeant, but respect for like instead of these. I'm going to change what I said. I never saw the decorations on a military uniform as decoration. Okay, or as flair. I always knew that this was significant, told a story about these. And a lot of these decorations are not just simply automatic. Okay, you pass this course, you get to wear this thing. It's no, you really have to earn this. And no one wants to earn these decorations, these medals. But now, it was something as, okay, this is the part of the uniform that has like the bank of medals. Now I really do appreciate it. Wow, if I were to freeze frame on that, or if I were to download this picture and really investigate, I would find out lots of stuff about, in many cases, terrible experiences that have shaped this individual. And even if it's someone that they're wearing their uniform because they're in front of Congress for doing something, being part of a bad thing, it's like, at least I can at least respect that. Yeah, this person has seen some stuff. Like that doesn't mean they should have embezzled $2 million off of a defense contract, but it does mean that they spent a lot of years overseas in very, very terrible, terrible situations.
Well,
that's probably enough for a bonus episode.
That's it. That was a flavoring of what the rabbit holes that you and I cannot go down, because we have to do a whole hour of strictly Google talk.
Yeah.
It was very hard, by the way, not to go down rabbit holes while talking to you during that. I really, it's like, don't do a flow.
Yeah. See, this is, we do not do a live stream. I know there are other shows where like on Twit, like you can tune in like to the live stream and basically hear a lot of us just talking for 10 or 15
all the banter.
Right. Mm-hmm. So this is basically what Flo and I go through. Maybe not necessarily a full hour, but like, no, we're just like chatting and, oh, that's right. I have to go to bed at 2 a.m. and you've got to put your kid to sleep. So we have to actually start talking about Google stuff soon.
Yeah. My kid sleeps late, for anybody who's wondering, but nobody was wondering. That's just me projecting.
she works third shift at the Raytheon plant. Are already contributing to the household. That's very admirable for a 2.5-year-old.
I feel like this is a good time for us to remind everybody that they can become members of the Relay FM network relay.fm.
They are members already. But this is a good time for us to thank you for being members.
That's what I meant.
Because
and sticking with us,
you know, I mean, especially now, we're always super, super grateful to our members, because you can listen to our podcast by just subscribing a podcatcher. At some point, each and every one of you decided, I'm going to go through all these extra steps of going to a URL and typing in my name and typing in like a credit card numbers and stuff like that. To say nothing of the fact that giving us money on a regular basis, it's that's an extra level of gratitude that we are aware of, that you don't have to do any of that. And of course, we're doing fine. We're doing great. The show is doing great. We're not at the cusp of cancellation or anything like that. But you do know that this is since COVID and a couple other things, you know, we've certainly gone from having like, oh my God, how are we going to fit 7 ads into every show? Oh, well, we're going to have to do it. And we're just going to have to, we never had 7 ads, but sometimes we do have no ads. And it's because of the thinning out market. So when you become a member, that's extra money in our pockets that we wouldn't have had mm-hmm. earlier. And we're very, very grateful for that too, because we like money. We like getting things with money, such as food to feed ourselves with, movie tickets, that sort of thing.
And also, we hope to inform you every week. So yes. Investing in us invests in your knowledge. I think we're going to have to end this, otherwise I don't think I want
that responsibility of conveying knowledge.
It's really just Andy and Flo being like, what happened with Google this week?
Some of it will be happy news. Some of it will be a little bit sad. But we will confront all of it. Yes,
exactly. We'll confront all of it, and we'll never do it with any hyperbolic YouTube thumbnails.
Exactly.
Okay. So, No hyperbole from me. No, sorry.
Exactly.
Except when I'm talking about cults.
Well, it's an organic, natural reaction. Last thing I will say before we close is simply that yes, I have unsubscribed from YouTube channels because of thumbnails, like where it's a channel that's like I like, but it's not necessarily like the one that I absolutely are must list of. But there was one person who said, "Gee, if I'm not getting enough hits just by doing the ooh face in the thumbnail, maybe I should like go and use that filter that bugs up my eyes and stuff like that." And after I realized that this is going to be something that I'm going to be seeing in my like subscribe feed like every single day, I don't need that. I'm sorry.
Nobody wants to look at a Bratz doll anymore.
Shall we?
Well, Andy.
Yes.
Thank you for doing this episode with me.
Thank you for doing the podcast with me. This has been, it's always lovely to have like my usual hour or two to talk to you. And it's nice to have mm-hmm. like an extra hour or so to talk to you.
And if you guys like this, those of you listening in right now, let us know. Because Andy and I have been shopping some, you know, we like to do these talks once in a while. So let us know how you feel about it. Exactly. You can tweet at us at Material Podcast or tweet Andy at Anatco. All you have to do is spell his last name. Or you can tweet me at Oh That Flow and just kind of let us know how you're vibing with this kind of episode. Let us know.
God, I am so like envious of your name is like two, three letter words that everyone knows how to spell like on audio.
I'm sorry, Andy. Google will autocomplete Andy's name. Okay. Don't worry. Google will help you. Did you mean Inatco? Yes, I did.
You couldn't have possibly meant Inatco. Let me give you the name of someone more interesting and more coherent.
Oh, geez, Andy. Oh, geez.
Okay, that's going to be enough. Thank you all of our listeners. Thank you to listeners as yet unmet. Usually we close by saying have a great week, but have a great day the rest of your day. Have a great life the rest of your life. The world's a beautiful, beautiful place, as Bill Cunningham used to say, the photographer from the New York Times. The beauty is out there if you go look for it. Thanks so much. If you search for beauty, you will find it much more. I knew it was much more eloquent than the way I put it, but it's still quite true. Thank you.